Good morning. Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. The U.S. Supreme Court decided this week that the federal government can join the fight over the water in the lower Rio Grande. The court ruled the U.S. can intervene in a water rights case Texas brought against New Mexico and Colorado in 2013. Texas claims New Mexico has deprived them of their legal share of water by allowing farmers in southern New Mexico to pump too much groundwater. What's at stake for agricultural and urban water users in New Mexico? And with climate change and severe drought conditions contributing to a bleak water outlook, what changes need to be made at the state and local levels? We want to hear from you. Call now 277-5866 or comment on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. I want to welcome in the studio this morning Peter White, a water rights attorney in Santa Fe. Good morning.
Thank you.
And also in the studio this morning, Jay Stein, shareholder with Stein and Brockman.
Good morning, Hannah.
Thanks for being here. And Jay was counsel for the city of Las Cruces in this case. So in 1938, Texas, New Mexico, and Colorado signed the Rio Grande Compact, agreeing on a system to equitably divvy up the waters of the Rio Grande. Basically, Colorado has to send a certain amount downstream to New Mexico, which has to send a certain amount on to Texas. But our understanding of watersheds has also changed since the 30s, right? Peter, can you give us a little background? I mean, did the Rio Grande Compact account for rights to groundwater as well as surface water? How does that work?
Not directly or expressly stated anything about groundwater. It is a compact that was developed initially in 1929 to protect the supply of water at Elephant Butte Reservoir in New Mexico. In 1938, the compact really defined three sections of the Colorado River in New Mexico. The upper one is above Ottawa Gauge, which is along the road to Los Alamos. Then Elephant Butte is the second dividing point. So there's an upper, middle, and lower sections of the compact, and each of them are different, handled differently in proceedings in the years past.
So what is Texas's argument based on in this case? Like, why do they say New Mexico's violating that agreement?
They're basically relying on contracts. They call them downstream contracts that were entered into by the United States with the Water Users Association in the lower Rio Grande in New Mexico. That's the La Mesilla Valley. The contracts were with the associations and then finally with the water districts in 1918. So they're saying that those contracts created certain rights to the use of water that is released from storage in Elephant Butte. And that right of water, rights to water, have been violated by New Mexico by allowing excessive diversions of groundwater that impact stream flow in the lower Rio Grande.
And, of course, New Mexico's comes back and says, no, it was legal, essentially.
Yes, basically they're saying that the impact, and that seems to be a hydrologic question, what is the impact of groundwater pumping on the river in terms of stream flows, and does it diminish the supply of water that would be available for Texas at the state line?
Right, because there's a complicated hydrology that we won't get into, obviously, but relationship between the water that flows in the river, the water that's beneath the ground and in aquifers and so on.
That's correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jay, please.
New Mexico is also saying that pre-project and pre-project, I mean pre-Rio Grande Project 1906 rights and pre-Rio Grande Compact rights are vested rights that are allowable. A, and B, that New Mexico has the right to administer the river with respect to rights after that to ensure that Texas receives the water that it claims.
All right. We have on the line now Tanya Maestas, Deputy Attorney General for Civil Affairs. Tanya, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. This case went to the Supreme Court just about a month ago, a little over a month ago. How serious is this case for New Mexico? I mean, what resources is your office dedicating to ensuring that New Mexico has a chance here?
This case is very important to the state of New Mexico. Attorney General Valdez takes this case very seriously. Since the moment that he entered office, he inherited this case from prior Attorney General Gary King, and we have been adamantly defending water rights within the state of New Mexico as part of this case.
I mean, these water cases do tend to drag on through multiple administrations, right? I mean, with like the Amit case, many, many years. Is it useful to say that was, you know, that came from Gary King?
Well, I feel that it's very important to note that this recent oral argument before the Supreme Court and the subsequent decision is kind of the end of the first portion of the case that we inherited. The issue that was before the Supreme Court was very narrow, and as you are aware, based upon the decision, led only to the narrow issue as to the United States' involvement within this case. This was very preliminary as part of the litigation based upon the prior administration's motion to dismiss. So following this order, we actually get the case started as it moves forward. It was kind of unorthodox that in its normal procession that is kind of drug out this long in its initial stages.
Tanya, couldn't the Attorney General's office have pivoted toward negotiations at some point instead of pursuing litigation?
Yes. And actually, Attorney General Valdez is very committed to a fair settlement for this case. He definitely is of the mindset that this case should not go through a long-term litigation proceeding. It is difficult on the state as it relates to resources and difficult on our parties involved. So we are working very hard with all of the relevant parties, with everyone who is directly impacted with this, to try and reach a fair and equitable solution to this case.
What would that fair settlement look like for the Attorney General?
Right now, we have a working group with the Lower Rio Grande Users Group. It's amazing that we have all been able to come together and commence discussions, both technical and legal discussions, as to what a settlement framework would look like. As you can note from the decision of the court, they directly discuss those downward contracts, the downstream contracts that play a really important role on this entire case and the equitable apportionment of water. So working directly with those parties is extremely valuable, and AG Valdez has put together a team that is discussing all viable options.
What do you think? How should New Mexico manage water for times of drought? Are New Mexico's politicians and government agencies doing enough to responsibly manage water? Call in now, 277-5866, or if you're outside of Albuquerque, 1-877-899-5866. You can also email letstalknm@kunm.org. Tanya Maestas, of the four parties who went before the Supreme Court in January, New Mexico was the only one to have a private attorney presenting oral arguments. That was Marcus Rael, who's not a water rights attorney and doesn't have experience before the Supreme Court. Why did the state of New Mexico decide to have Rael take the lead in this case in Washington, D.C.?
The decision to use Robles, Rael, and Anaya was based on the fact that this case is so important to the state of New Mexico that we wanted a local attorney with extensive environmental experience who comes from a Hispanic-based law firm, who knows the people of New Mexico, who knows the importance of all of the cultural aspects that play into this case. We felt very confident that someone local, knowing how important this case was to the state of New Mexico, was a great representative for us.
All right. I want to put that idea to Jay Stein here in the studio with Stein and Brockman. You were in D.C. You heard the states present oral arguments. What did you think of New Mexico's performance or New Mexico's case?
Well, our role was reduced because New Mexico had initially made a motion to dismiss the case, and that was essentially withdrawn. prior to the final briefing on the special master's report. So what New Mexico was really arguing was a reduced position, criticizing the special master's logic or his some of his research or some of his or the fact that he went outside the record and used some out of off the record evidence. One area that was that remains of particular concern to the city of Las Cruces was got to the center of the argument, which was, what is the role of the United States to be? The United States was claiming that it had a role under the compact, and the special master had said, no, you don't. But
that's the Rio Grande Compact, which was between the three states.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you may nevertheless try to participate to assert your claims under reclamation law, under reclamation contract law. And the state basically agreed with that. The point, though, that we wish had been made stronger was that those issues have all been decided. They were all resolved in the state adjudication that's pending in the city of Las Cruces in Stream System 104, and that resolution began in 2013 when the United States was held to have no interest in groundwater, and its priority date was established, and its release and storage rights were determined. Our concern is that those might be relitigated now in the U.S. Supreme Court.
So that case determined that the U.S. had no claim to it, just a certain portion? Is that right? Of groundwater?
It claimed that the judge held that the United States did not have a groundwater right as part of its Rio Grande project right. It's a surface water district.
Okay. Tanya Maestas on the line, Deputy Attorney General for Civil Affairs. Anything else you want to add about this case moving forward?
I think it's just, again, very important to note that AG Valderas takes the defense of this case very seriously. We are working very hard to protect the water rights within the state of New Mexico. This is an extremely valuable resource to our state. We fully understand that. And we'll do everything within our power to reach a fair and equitable resolution as quickly as possible.
All right, Tanya Maestas with the Attorney General's Office, thank you so much for being here. I want to go to rewind in time and talk briefly about a different Texas versus New Mexico case that might shed some light on this one. So Texas sued New Mexico over almost the same exact thing on the Pecos River in the 80s. Peter White, you represented New Mexico in that case. Briefly, what happened as a result?
As a result, New Mexico was found to have underdelivered a significant amount of water to Texas during a period of over 20 years. And it involves very complex hydrologic determinations. But at the conclusion, the underdelivery was found by the court, and then the question was the liability. We were liable for our underdelivery, and what is the solution? And the court suggested, the special master suggested to the court that New Mexico be allowed to ensure deliveries in the future through an amended decree, ultimately, that would require deliveries of water each year to the state line in Texas. But the judgment also required New Mexico to pay or compensate Texas the value of the water that they did not receive in that period. And then after a two-week hearing in Denver regarding the compensation to Texas, it was determined by the parties that based on the special master's comments at the two-week hearing that we settled on $14 million. So we paid Texas $14 million. In order to ensure compliance in the future, I'm told that we have probably spent $100 million leasing and buying water rights to increase and deliver adequate water to comply with the Supreme Court's decree. So it's been a very expensive experience. My concern is there are some aspects of the Lower Rio Grande litigation that is deja vu to me.
Right. Well, I wanted to say it kind of begs the question. I mean, shouldn't we know better by this point?
Yes. The simple answer is yes. I think we need to anticipate that groundwater pumping that water rights are apportioned are surface water rights, but groundwater pumping can affect the delivery obligation of New Mexico. And the Rio Grande Compact for the Middle Valley requires deliveries to Elephant Butte Reservoir. The Lower Valley does not require deliveries. The compact does not require deliveries to the state line or to Texas. It requires the storage of water only in Elephant Butte. And then you have the Rio Grande Project Act, which is a congressional act based on contracts with irrigation districts in both Texas and New Mexico that set forth the requirements of New Mexico in order to provide the water under that act, not the compact.
Are you worried about the Rio Grande? Are you most concerned for agriculture, the state's economy, or the wildlife that depends on the river? Are you a farmer? Can your industry survive a cut in water allocations? You can call into this show, 277-5866. Tweet with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. Back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Program support comes from Listen Up, New Mexico's resource for hi-fi, home theater, and smart home systems since 1972. Located at 6916 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast or online at listenup.com.
Scholar Paul Harris was doing research on composer Malcolm Arnold and came across a note about a lost wind quintet. Harris thought, oh, that's so sad, we'll never get to hear it. Well, now that lost manuscript has been found. The story and the music, Malcolm Arnold's Wind Quintet, on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today, an interstate water dispute over the Lower Rio Grande. Call in now, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. I'm here in the studio with Jay Stein, shareholder with Stein and Brockman, and attorney for the city of Las Cruces in this case, and Peter White, also a water rights attorney in Santa Fe. So, Jay, briefly, what was the U.S. government's argument for getting involved in this case? Just remind us.
That they were inherently a part of the compact. Because a compact cannot be enacted in the United States without the consent of Congress. Once it is negotiated, it is also then ratified by the Congress and therefore becomes a law of the United States, and that they have certain specific obligations and responsibilities under the Rio Grande Compact, one of which is deliveries to the Republic of Mexico, which has some 60,000 acre feet right out of Elephant Butte Reservoir, and another is its obligation to make deliveries to the irrigation district in Texas, El Paso Water Improvement District number 1.
And the city of Las Cruces filed a friend of the court brief opposing the federal government's involvement. So now that the U.S. can file claims in this case, what are your concerns moving forward, or what are the city's concerns?
Well, our concern is the one I mentioned previously. What is the status of the proceeding in the state adjudication and the orders, which are now complete? They're not final in a legal sense because they've been stayed pending the effort to negotiate settlements that Tanya Maestas referenced. But our concern is what happens to all the work that was accomplished and finished in Stream System Issue 104 in the state adjudication, and do we have to go through all of that over again in the federal, in the Supreme Court? And Las Cruces is not a party in the United States case. Those roles are typically limited to the states themselves.
And your firm also represented the Albuquerque Bernalillo County Water Utility Authority in this case. So Jay, your firm is representing the cities in this case. Why should Albuquerque and other North Central cities be concerned? I mean, this is on its face, this is about the southern farmers and their groundwater, right?
Yes, Albuquerque filed an amicus curiae brief as well, and they had two basic concerns. The first is that if the compact requires that deliveries of water, that New Mexico's delivery obligation is into Elephant Butte Reservoir, but that if you move that 100 miles downstream to the Texas state line, that adds an additional 100 miles that you have to put water in, that will inevitably upset the apportionment ratio that already exists in the Middle Valley and that only requires that water get into the reservoir. Now water is going to have to go all the way down to the state line. Secondly, they are troubled by allegations in the United States complaint where the United States is asserting essentially an ownership right to the groundwater and stating that entities have to obtain contracts from the United States to use groundwater. And this seems to fly in the face of state law and regulation, which gives the state the authority to issue permits to use groundwater.
So it could be a whole lot more red tape for farmers there in that region.
Well, not just farmers, but for municipalities.
Oh, yeah.
And it creates an issue as to administrative regulation and authority over groundwater in the state.
So there's a question from a caller. She wanted to know how we pay for damages. So that raises the question, where are we getting the money to buy water rights to comply with the compact? I don't know if either of you want to speak to that.
The decision was made in the early 90s as to how to ensure compliance with the Supreme Court's decree on the Pecos River. And it was a difficult decision. There are two options. One is to enforce strictly all priorities on the Pecos River, which would require you to shut off the most junior users. And most of those junior users are in the Roswell Basin, which is a fairly large basin, 125,000 acres, an important farming area. The other option is for the state legislature to appropriate money in acts that would allow the New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission to acquire water rights on the Pecos and retire those rights to increase stream flow. And the decision was made to go through acquisition of rights rather than shutting off priority. There could have been an option of doing both, a part of both, but the decision politically was that the legislature may not appropriate the money if you were also trying to shut off people.
Hmm. Now I want to welcome on the line Senator Joseph Cervantes, Democrat from Las Cruces, representing District 31 there. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning. Good morning to everybody on the call, Hannah.
Yeah, thanks for being on the line. What are you hearing from constituents about this case?
Well, Hannah, I think there's some important things to get straight with everybody in New Mexico right now, which is to disabuse people of the notion that this is a southern New Mexico issue. The fact is Texas is suing us for what legislators and some of my key colleagues have been told is $1 billion in money. Our entire state budget's about $6.3 billion, so if Texas is successful, $1 billion damage award against New Mexico would be, insurmountable, really. The other thing is that Texas is suing for what they claim is under-delivered water going back to 1938. So you're talking about, seven or more decades of water being shorted to Texas. So the allegations in the Texas lawsuit are that they want more water delivered to Elephant Butte Reservoir. If they're successful, that water is going to have to come upstream of Elephant Butte Reservoir, and that's going to, of course, implicate everybody on the Rio Grande north of Elephant Butte, and that's going to, of course, include our big cities like Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and others.
Right, and this kind of gets to that last listener's question. If New Mexico ends up owing Texas money or water, where is that money going to come from, and where will that water come from? I mean, what are the politics around that?
Well, that's why it's great you're having this program, and it's important that New Mexicans focus on this issue. We've had some very adverse Supreme Court rulings recently, and frankly, comes as no surprise to some of us in the legislature that these days were coming. You can already see a little bit of the passing the buck going on. You know, earlier in the program, you heard people saying that they inherited these problems. The fact of the matter is the problems are in front of us. And we just had rulings from the Supreme Court again this week and earlier in the year after hearing there that aren't going New Mexico's way. And the implications of this are again, important to recognize that what's happening is the federal government is lining itself up with Texas in this lawsuit, and the Supreme Court has said they can do so. New Mexico is arguing that the federal government didn't have a role in the dispute. The Supreme Court has disagreed, and I think most of us knew pretty darn well that that's exactly what the Supreme Court was going to do here. But New Mexico's kind of taken a stubborn position and seems to not be willing to recognize the writing on the walls here. And if we continue to do that, we're going to be behind the eight ball when those damage awards start getting discussed or settlement starts getting discussed in earnest.
Senator Cervantes, what do you want to see happen next at this point?
Well, I think there was an earlier suggestion and part of the discussion. New Mexico's got to have somebody, a leader, who can sit across the table from the governor of Texas and the water leaders and see what we can agree upon and work out what we can, if it's possible to do so. Litigating this is not going New Mexico's way. We continue to lose ruling after ruling, hearing after hearing. And even worse, the Supreme Court has appointed a special master to advise the U.S. Supreme Court on this case. And all you have to do is read the writings of the special master to know very clearly what he thinks of New Mexico's arguments, and he doesn't think much of them.
What do you think? Are you worried about the Rio Grande and others of rivers that flow through New Mexico? Are our state's politicians and government agencies doing enough to responsibly manage water? Call in 277-5866. You can also get your comments and questions to us on Twitter using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Senator Cervantes, you've been working on water scarcity for years in the state legislature. What are the most important actions for the state to take outside of this case as we enter another period of drought?
Well, what we've got to do is recognize that we have all these diverse people working on these issues, but none of them are really being led together in a collective way. So you have the Attorney General off doing its thing. You have the state engineer off doing its thing. You have cities up and down the Rio Grande, counties and governments. Everybody's kind of off doing their own thing. And then you have, of course, the farming community and Elephant Butte Irrigation. But nobody's bringing it all together, and as a state, we're not speaking with one voice, and Texas is exploiting that. And as you pointed out earlier, they've got one voice that is speaking pretty clearly for their entire state. And Texas knows this. You know, those of us that have those connections with people in Texas, they know New Mexico's got a lot of people moving in a lot of directions, but really no collaborative single voice and no direction. So, the important thing I hope that folks take away from your program today, Hannah, is that this is an issue that if Texas prevails with a $1 billion judgment against a state like New Mexico, or if Texas, and it's really and or because they're seeking money damages and water, so they get the relief they're looking for, and they're certainly gathering a head of steam to do so. The dollar amount to New Mexico would be, again, something we could never handle. And number two, the amount of water that they want to have delivered to the reservoir is going to have to come from upstream. The fact of the matter is we haven't even begun to adjudicate what's called the Middle Rio Grande. In other words, water that's being used between Cochiti and Socorro, roughly. Nobody even knows really what those rights are. They're not adjudicated. We don't know how that's being managed from the standpoint of adjudication. And so there's just a lot that needs to be done and a lot that hasn't been done over the years. And it's becoming a crisis for our state.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico. Our focus today, very important interstate water dispute that could have stakes of $1 billion for New Mexico. That's a dispute over the lower Rio Grande. Call in now, 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866. If you're outside of Albuquerque, 1-877-899-5866. So we just heard Senator Cervantes sort of talking about all these different stakeholders pulling in different directions, you know, lack of coordination. Peter White here in the studio, you worked for almost 3 decades at the state engineer's office. Can you explain how that's an appointed position, so an inherently political position, right? How does that office influence these cases? What's the state engineer's job?
Well, the state engineer's job is twofold. One is to protect existing property rights from being impaired by new uses of water or changes in the uses of water. Second, it's to protect New Mexico's interest in interstate stream so as to avoid being sued by downstream states for underdeliveries. We need to be ensured that we're in compliance. In my tenure, I worked with the state engineer, Steve Reynolds, for, probably quite a few years, 13 years as the general counsel for the state engineer. He was often referred to as a water czar. He was very bright. He worked extremely hard at what he did. He knew what he was doing. He focused on hydrology and engineering and not on lawyers. I think to the extent that the state engineer has inadequate experience in terms of water, there's a tendency for the state engineer who lacks experience to rely on attorneys to protect the state engineer from being sued. But there's no effort to really a proactive effort to try to resolve problems. So Steve Reynolds was able to do a lot, but he also failed in some regards, on the Pecos in particular.
And I will say we did invite the state engineer for an interview on this program. He was not available. I do want to get to a listener call. Daniel from Albuquerque, you're on the line now.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, what's your comment?
I was just wondering, I want to kind of go back to the issue of payment. If New Mexico is found responsible to pay for damages, I guess, how feasible would something like a water excise tax be? And if it is feasible, what do you think that would look like?
Any of our panelists have an idea on that? A water excise tax.
That is a tax on the use of water. If you pump water, then you pay a certain amount per acre foot or a gallon of water you pump.
Is Daniel on the line, is that kind of what you meant, like a per-use tax?
Yes, absolutely.
Sounds complicated, right?
The problem here is that the value of water varies significantly, whether it's municipal or agricultural use. And like in the Middle Rio Grande Valley, several, maybe 10 years ago, water rights were valued at $37,000 an acre for the water right, not the land. So the value of water is much more significant to cities than it is to farmers. That causes a problem because in the Lower Rio Grande, the Lower Rio Grande is bordered by El Paso on the south, Albuquerque, and the Middle Valley on the north. And it's between these two significant urban uses with mostly agricultural use of the water. So the tendency that, and people say water flows uphill to money, and the money is in these cities. So the politics, the geopolitics of water in the Lower Valley is very significant because it puts the Lower Valley at risk of losing water both to Texas downstream or having water not being used or imported from upstream of Elephant Butte to offset impacts.
Jay, yeah.
It's a concept that cities can consider, but we'd like the burden to be shared.
What do you mean by that?
That agriculture would pay its share and other users as well. But yes, an excise tax on water usage is a concept cities can consider.
Another caller question. How does this case affect Colorado? That's where the headwaters of the Rio Grande are. Colorado is, of course, a party to this case as well. Any thoughts on that, how this case may affect Colorado?
I have not considered that. I don't think it would affect it. If it results in changing the requirements of the Rio Grande Compact to require the deliveries of water to the state line from Elephant Butte, I think it would impact not only the Middle Rio Grande Valley, but also Colorado. It sort of it readjusts the values that each state has with regards to the use of water in different parts of the Rio Grande Basin. So it could have some impact. I think that's this decision by the court in on this motion to or this effort to the United States to join is a very significant decision, not so much about whether the U.S. is a party to the case. Is the rationale the court used to say why it is a party when it says, the court says in its opinion, that New Mexico has an obligation under the compact, implicit in the compact, to deliver water to uses in Texas. And that's setting up a situation which would be a disaster for New Mexico, not only the lower Rio Grande. The compact, Rio Grande Compact, did not apportion water below Elephant Butte. There is a project act, Rio Grande Project Act, that in effect statutorily apportioned water between the two states with regards to irrigation use in the two districts based on these contracts that the court refers to. That is, in a sense, an apportionment by Congress agreed to by the states and by the irrigation districts. And that's very different. It doesn't require a delivery obligation to Texas. What Texas is trying to do is to create a delivery obligation on the lower Rio Grande, which would be adverse effects on the Rio Grande Compact for upstream states.
Jay Stein, did you have a thought before we go to break here?
Yeah, there's a simple answer. I don't know if Colorado has tumbled to it yet. The Rio Grande Compact is very forgiving in that it has a debits and credits clause. You're not penalized for shortfalls on a yearly basis, but you can accumulate them. And when there's a spill from the reservoir, all debits are erased.
When the reservoir fills up.
And
you
it
mean?
Spills.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So debits were being accumulated between 1942 and 1985. When that reservoir spilled in 1985, all accumulated debits for New Mexico and Colorado, which had assumed, which were about 1 million acre feet, were erased. If you move the delivery line down to this, the delivery point down to the state line, I think you get rid of the debits clause. So Colorado would not be able to erase its debits anymore. I think that's a serious issue for them to look at.
I agree with that concern.
All right. Let's take a quick break. Call in now, 277-5866. You can tweet the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We'll be back in a minute.
Red or green? It's the New Mexico question. But when it comes time to donate your unwanted vehicle, it's click or call. If you feel more comfortable filling out an online form, go to KUNM.org and under support, select donate your vehicle. If you'd rather call and speak to a human being, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227. It's your choice. Click or call. Either way, your old car or truck helps to keep great programs like this one on the air.
Two of the renowned Native artists with ties to New Mexico will share the stage in a production paying homage to the state's culture. Jock Soto is an esteemed ballet dancer with roots in the Navajo Nation. Robert Mirabal is a Grammy Award-winning musician, writer, and poet from Taos Pueblo. They'll join us to talk about their collaboration on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Hannah Colton. We're talking about the Texas versus New Mexico water rights lawsuit over the lower Rio Grande. Join the conversation by calling 1-877-899-5866. I want to welcome on the line now Samantha Barncastle, the attorney for the Elephant Butte Irrigation District. Good morning, Samantha.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. The farmers in your district are literally, like, geographically caught in the middle of this. Explain again, we've sort of alluded to it, but explain the logistics of how water gets from New Mexico to Texas there from the reservoir.
Yeah, so it's an interesting situation. We are geographically situated in New Mexico, but legally for compact purposes situated in Texas. So our deliveries of our water come from New Mexico to Elephant Butte Reservoir. And from there, the irrigation district, my client, takes over and ensures deliveries not only to farmers within New Mexico, but then to the state line to the farmers in the El Paso district in Texas. We also actually make deliveries across the state line to Texas farmers.
And the Elephant Butte Irrigation District tried unsuccessfully to intervene in this case, right? Who's representing those farmers' interests in this case then?
Well, at this point, we would look to three entities. We would look to New Mexico, Texas, and the United States. And it will depend on what the issue is as to who potentially is going to represent us on that issue. We have disagreements and agreements with all three of those entities. Given the Supreme Court's ruling this week, it almost looks like we may have another shot at moving to intervene, depending upon how this case progresses, because the Supreme Court, I think, rightfully recognized that we are a contract holder, and between EBID and EP number one, we are the only contract holders that they were referring to in those downstream contracts. And so if we start to get into the nuts and bolts of those contracts, it seems to me that those parties need to be in the case and participating.
Let's take a call. Josh from Albuquerque, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Josh. What's your comment?
I'm just wondering, so it sounds like there's a lot of layers to the cake here. And how far back does our agreement to give Texas water go? And is there not a way to kind of challenge the fundamentals of having to pay them or give them water for water that might not exist on such a dry year like now?
Can you, Josh, could you reframe your question?
Yeah. So is there an original law that we can go back to, like maybe in the 1800s, you know, or I mean, as far back as Albuquerque or New Mexico being a state, is there any past laws that we can sort of revisit to try to challenge our obligation to pay Texas or give them water?
I'm going to throw that question to Senator Joseph Cervantes on the line from Las Cruces. Prior established agreements like 1800s or before, what do you think about that?
The fact of the matter is that whatever took place before 1938 was resolved between Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas with the compact, with the Rio Grande Compact. The issue in the Supreme Court the last few months and decided this week is, does the federal government have the right to enforce that compact? The federal government was not a party to the compact, really. It was the 30 states on the Rio Grande who entered the compact. But the federal government has been arguing that it has the right to enforce the compact. And New Mexico was opposing that. I think a lot of us knew and saw the writing on the wall that the feds were going to step in. And the Supreme Court has said they get to come in. So the feds are in now, and the feds are lined up with Texas. And New Mexico is left out there on the end of the at the end of the limb. But to your issue, Josh, is the matter before the Supreme Court right now is the terms of the 1938 compact signed by those three states, and what took place before that is relevant to the compact. But ultimately, the Supreme Court and its special master are looking at the compact itself and how they're intending to enforce that. So that's why earlier I said that Texas is looking back to damage claims going back to 1938. That's why you're talking about, by Texas's own press this week, they're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars and a lot of water that they claim was under-delivered going back for seven decades.
Samantha Barncastle on the line, Elephant Butte Irrigation District attorney. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, this is quite a complex situation, and to basically say that, you know, we're looking at a breach of contract suit, so let's just throw out the contract, is an extremely dangerous position to take. I mean, if you throw out the agreement that the states made almost 100 years ago, you're talking about relitigating, and the way those principles work now, based on what they were back then, you'd be looking at cities competing for the massive share of the water where, first of all, the farmers were the primary users back then. But under equitable apportionment, you're looking at who can most beneficially use that water. And to our south, we have a large, large city. We have military installations. We have cross-border relations issues. Mexico would certainly want a piece of the pie larger than they currently have. So to say that we're going to throw the contract out because we've breached it is just not an option here. We've got to figure out a different plan. And quite frankly, what we're dealing with is a situation that was resolved. The irrigation districts and the United States had resolved these state line delivery issues through our 2008 operating agreement, which was required by Congress as far back as the 80s when we took over the Rio Grande project ownership. And so once we resolved among ourselves, the contracting parties, how water was going to be divided, that should have been the end of the game there. But instead, you saw a decision from former Attorney General King that was outright wrong, in my opinion, that caused all of this mess and that has put our state in this horrible situation to now have to defend, because Texas said, basically, if you're going to go after our operating agreement, we're going after the rest of your water. And that's what they've done.
What do you think? What concerns you most about New Mexico's water situation, especially as we enter a time of severe drought again? Call 277-5866. We had an email comment from Michael in Midland, Texas. He says he thinks Texas is being totally hypocritical, that they're selling Rio Grande water to oil companies for fracking. That's from Michael. Sharon in Santa Fe, did you have a comment?
It's sort of a curiosity question as well as a comment, and I'm wondering if the fracking industry in our Southland is a participant in order to get the water that they require for their process, and if so, what portion is that, and is that negotiable?
Jay Stein, do you have any ideas on that? Did you hear anything about fracking?
I don't know of any fracking in the lower Rio Grande. There is a considerable amount of fracking in Lee County and Eddy County on the eastern side.
Senator Cervantes, do you hear from any fracking participants down there?
Well, fracking is a big concern all around the state, of course, to everyone committed to the environment. I chair the Conservation Committee in the Senate, so we're responsible for our water and our natural resources and our oil and gas in the state. So fracking is always an issue, but with regard to the litigation in the Supreme Court and the waters along the Rio Grande, right now fracking and the demands, water demands of fracking have not been relevant to the issues between New Mexico and Texas. And so I don't see that as an issue right now, except, again, if Texas prevails on this and gets the Supreme Court to order more water reach the reservoir from north of reservoir, including northern New Mexico, then that water is going to come from north of the reservoir, and that may affect fracking in other parts of the state.
All right. Obviously, so many stakeholders on this issue. I do want to zoom out for a moment and just say, underlying this whole case, of course, is a grim forecast. Snowpack this year is desperately low. The whole state is in a drought. Climate change will very likely make things worse in years to come. Just want to put that in everyone's minds as we finish out the conversation. Octavio in Albuquerque, what's your comment?
So I've got a question about, you have these large companies like Coca-Cola bottling plants and other companies that are taking municipal water and groundwater and then selling it to make a profit. Are these companies being taxed for using such large amounts of water?
I think the answer is no.
Yeah.
Senator, do you know about taxes for big companies like Coca-Cola? I don't know that any of our panelists know about that, but thank you so much for that question.
So, Hannah, this is Joseph. So the question's come up a couple of times about taxing water. And so, again, since we're focusing on the lawsuit between Texas and New Mexico, it's important to realize something Samantha talked about a little bit ago, which is what the special master of the Supreme Court seems to be headed in the direction of doing is recognizing that the Elephant Butte project, the reservoir and all of the infrastructure below it, has been paid for by the farming community, by the members of Elephant Butte Irrigation District. And so the special master seems determined to recognize their rights as a priority. And then behind that, the city of Las Cruces and others, and that's where you get into these municipal water users, like the last question. But the fact of the matter is that when there's questions about paying taxes,
The fact is that the people on the lower Rio Grande have been paying effectively what are taxes every year because they pay for fees to Elephant Butte Irrigation District and have essentially paid for the project and pay back the federal government for the original cost.
Samantha, what fears are you hearing from farmers down there? I mean, are people changing their behavior, their plans for upcoming seasons?
Well, you know, that's sort of an interesting question because it's like asking, you know, are the farmers watching the litigation and changing their plans? No, the farmers are watching the weather, and they're reacting the way they have historically reacted. And so if they know there's not going to be water in the reservoir, they go out and they start water marketing among themselves anyway. They start, instead of maybe single or double cropping, they single crop, or instead of triple cropping, they double crop, depending upon how much water they have available to them. So while the farmers are paying attention to this, and there are lots of lawyers involved on behalf of the farmers, they're not changing what they're doing because of this litigation. They're changing what they're doing because they're very adaptable people anyway, and they've done this for century upon century upon century. This is how farmers work. They aren't going to necessarily get excited about the next year worth of case law. They focus on what hits them and what matters to them the most right now, which is always going to be the weather and the water available to them.
So the rest of the landscape and ecosystem along the entire Rio Grande could potentially be seriously impacted by the outcome of this case. Some species depend on having water for a certain portion of the year. Who's looking out for the ecological interests in this dispute? I mean, this is for any of our attorneys. Any ideas?
Well, I've represented protestants to the city of Albuquerque's application to divert surface water from the Rio Grande. The downstream protestants included the Assessment Payers Association of the Middle Grand Conservancy District, but also some environmental organizations as well. So there's some coalitions that have developed in the past between farmers or rural water users and environmental entities. It's difficult to maintain that relationship because it's very costly. Litigation is very costly because litigation over Albuquerque's diversion lasted 12 years, went up to the Supreme Court. So it's very difficult to deal with the problem in that regard in trying to form alliances of users.
Jay Stein, yeah.
Cities have very strict conservation programs to reduce their water use, which it preserves and saves water for other purposes, including environmental and ecological purposes. And as well, cities are required to make the rivers whole, where their out-of-priority diversions have the effect of taking water out of stream systems, and that preserves ecological values as well. Let me get back just quickly to the question on taxing the caller who talked about taxes on companies like Coca-Cola plants. There's not a tax per se, but cities obviously sell water at rates to various companies and industries who are customers, and there are commercial rates for that.
Okay, thanks for that. We're nearing the end of the hour here. What steps should the state or local governments be taking proactively to deal with water management? I mean, we don't know what the outcome of this case will be, but it sounds pretty grim. Any ideas, Samantha?
Well, there's one major, I think, point that needs to be addressed, and that's that people on the ground deal far better with the water resources on the ground than somebody sitting in a cubicle in Washington, D.C., or even in Santa Fe. So giving more control to those on the ground who know what they're doing with the water in the first place is essential to ensuring that we don't find ourselves in this position in the future. So
all
there
right.
was a comment earlier about allowing...
Thanks. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you to everyone who called in this morning. Thank you again to our guests, Jay Stein, Peter White, Joseph Cervantes, State Senator and also candidate for New Mexico Governor, Samantha Barncastle, and Tanya Maestas. This show was produced in partnership with Laura Paskus and KUNM Media Partners, The Santa Fe Reporter, NM Political Report, and New Mexico In Focus. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Sarah Trujillo screened your calls. Mallory Begay live tweeted. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico.
EOM Socorro, with translators K220EM Nyeezy, K220AV Taos, K216ET Eagle Nest, and K216CU Cuba, online at KUNM.org.